This story happened in South Lake Tahoe, California, about 7 years ago. I grew up in Northern California, and since I was a kid, me and my family always visited Tahoe.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I was very fortunate and grateful because my grandparents, on my dad's side, owned a cabin there. This will seem random, but it's important to have this context. My parents ended up divorcing when I was about 12 years old, and when this story takes place, I was probably around the age of 14. Anyway, this was one of the first times since the divorce that my mom wanted to visit Tahoe, but she didn't want to stay at the family cabin because it was connected with my dad. She ended up having us stay at the Harvey Hotel and Casino. I thought it would be a fun adventure outside from what I had known up until that point, which was that we would always stay at the cabin whenever we visited Tahoe. It was just me and my mom having some nice mother-daughter time for the whole trip. I don't remember much other than this incident. My mom ended up taking me to the local TJ Maxx, and we got some new clothes. We drive back to the Harvey's Hotel and go back to our room. Now, if I'm remembering correctly, we weren't on the top floor or the bottom floor. I want to say we were on like the 10th floor. I specifically remember no one being in the elevator with us on our way to the room. As we were unloading our new clothes we just bought, I'm standing near the hotel door Snapchatting one of my friends, when I hear the doorknob start to slightly move. Meanwhile, I have my mom in the back of the room, on her bed, yapping away like she always does. She's very talkative. I remember zoning out and focusing on the door. I very quietly and carefully looked through the peephole to see a grown man, probably in his early 30s, with a black hoodie on, trying to open our hotel room door. There's always that side of us humans that likes to try and rationalize things into a better light. And I was doing just that, trying to rationalize that maybe he just has the wrong room or something. Even though clearly he did have bad intentions. His demeanor said it all. He kept looking over his shoulders, which sent chills down my spine. The way he was slowly twisting the knob freaked me out too. It was very intentional in the way to not alert anyone inside. I told my mom to be quiet, and at first she didn't understand why. Once I gestured to the door, looking like I had seen a ghost, she looked in the peephole and saw him. I'm not sure what made him stop trying to get into our room, but one moment he was there, and the next he was gone. My mom ended up calling the hotel's security. They sent out security on our level, but he was long gone by then. Me and my mom reflected on what could have happened, trying to cope with what just went down. The conclusion my mom came up with was that he followed us either from the parking lot of the hotel or within the casino, then to our room. When I think about it, I know it doesn't make much sense because how would he know which floor we were on if he did follow us from the lobby? I swear there was no one in the elevator or even on our floor when we got out of it. I could be wrong with how I remember it about being alone in the elevator and the floor, but I really don't think so. I hope I am wrong in a way, because the alternative is that this man also could have been watching us before this incident even took place. He had to have known it was just me and my mom. I don't think anyone would be stupid enough to try that if my dad or brother were with us. It's scary to think what could have happened if he somehow did get into our room. This story is definitely ingrained into my head. And even after all this took place, me and my mom ended up staying in the same room for that night. I can tell you, though, I didn't sleep much that night. I was 19 or 20 when we finally found a place to rent in the same neighborhood as my family. At the time, I was 6 months pregnant with my son, getting situated in the house and the start of a new era. For some imagery, the house was a one-story, three-bedroom house with a den that later became my aunt's bedroom. The living room was very open and connected to a kitchen with a sliding glass door that complemented the backyard. Amazingly, we had a nice patch of grass surrounded in rocks. Compared to Hawaii, the house was actually very nice for the price we had gotten it at, given the cost of living is significantly lower than it is in Hawaii. My mother let me stay in the master bedroom with its own bathroom, which was convenient for me, since I constantly needed to pee every 10 seconds. When you open my bedroom door, it led straight down a hallway that led to the laundry room. Staring down the hall always gave me an eerie feeling, like someone could be in the room at the end of the hall, just looking back at me, and I would never know. When my son was around 3 months old, I started experiencing weird things. At first, it was my door randomly slamming on its own, which inevitably ended up being just the AC turning on and off. Then it was the creaky noises that could faintly sound like footsteps coming from the attic. I told myself it was just a creaky house making a racket. Nothing to worry about, right? But things started to get creepier. For a few nights, I began having these vivid nightmares that would creep me out, but I would ultimately forget about them later on in the day as I needed to tend to my child and tidy my room constantly. Then came the sleep paralysis that would occur 2 times in the same month. The first time I experienced it in that house, it was your standard sleep paralysis, not being able to move and just listen and be in my thoughts, looking around the room waiting for it to end. The second time was much more sinister, and it shook me to my core. It's not uncommon to have hallucinations when under paralysis, but what I saw shook me up for years to come. I was laying there in my room. My LED light was on red, since it's the darkest color to have on that emits enough light for me to get out of bed and make my way around the room without hurting myself or accidentally tripping over anything. Especially if my baby wakes up in the middle of the night and I need to tend to him. Looking around the red-lit room, I was put on edge and felt a deep, eerie sensation that I wasn't alone and something was watching me. I looked over to the right side of the room where my bathroom door was, not being able to turn my head, but just look with my eyes. My bed was right beside that bedroom door, 3 to 4 feet from the side of my bed. And what I saw sent a chill down my spine. The bathroom door was open, ajar, with something standing in front of it. It was very tall, wide shoulders and a slim body, its pale face and deep black eyes that stared right into mine. It was wearing some kind of collared jacket or hood of some sort, in all black, rugged and ripped. In complete and utter disbelief, I tried to close my eyes and open them again, but I couldn't take my eyes away. There it was, so close to me, just staring. I could hear the faint sounds of my cousin Tate playing some kind of video game in the living room, talking into his headset, which made the situation feel so real. The figure started to push the door more open into the bathroom, its hands slowly moving, revealing the long, pointed fingernails, as if it was getting ready to make a move and come towards me. But then I snapped out of it and woke up, Jumping up from my position, I stared at the bathroom until I got the courage to make my way over to it and turn the lights on. Nothing. After that, I kept my bathroom door shut every night before I slept. I kept it to myself since I just didn't see the point of talking about it. I shook it off and tried to rationalize it as my mind just making things up. After that, I began to experience a few unusual things. One night I was taking a shower and started to hear whispers, faint chatter of many different voices, none of which I could recognize or understand what was being said. It sounded as if I was standing in a crowded room and everyone was talking all at once in a low volume. I called out to my mom and brother, thinking maybe they came into my room and were conversing with each other. The voices stopped abruptly, and no answer back. I thought to myself, well, that was strange, and continued to shower. Slowly, the voices came back and grew louder and louder and louder until something whispered, "Safari," right into my ear. I turned off the water and jumped out of the shower, running into my bedroom with water dripping down onto the carpet. My room was empty. All I could do was stand there frozen and stare at the bathroom once again. After I got dressed and made my way around the house to find it practically empty, only my brother was there, and I asked if he had called out to me or was on the phone. Puzzled, he shook his head no and asked why. I responded that I must have been hearing things. A few days later, my cousin and I decided to have a few drinks and hang out in my room. Sharing old stories about our childhood, my cousin began telling me the story of the time that we all lived in a haunted house in Virginia. At the time, I was too young and wanted to be told all the details of things that happened, but I can save that story for another day. Then I remembered when I had sleep paralysis and began to tell my cousin about my experience, but before I could describe what I saw, my cousin cut me off and asked, "Did it have a white face?" I looked at my cousin in shock and asked him, "How did you know that?" To which he casually replied, "Because I see it all the time." "Where?" "In the backyard," he replied. "Why do you think I stopped smoking outside and moved to the garage?" he joked. I asked him to describe to me what it looked like, and he said that it wore some kind of black dress, as he put it. I asked him if it had a hood or collar of some sort, and he thought to himself and shook his head, "Yes." It was strange that we had both seen something similar. I couldn't really make sense of it. Intoxicated and quite interested, I started to believe that maybe we were both seeing the exact same thing. Something was in our backyard. This next part is quite interesting, and I still think about it from time to time. At some point, my mom came up to me and asked me how I felt about this new house. I told her I liked it and how open and spacious it was, since we had so many things that we own and didn't have a place to put it in previous homes we lived in. Then she crossed her arms and moved closer to me and asked, "Have you experienced anything strange?" Alarmed and relieved, I started to explain to her what I had told Tate weeks before. When I began to describe what I saw, my mother's eyes widened in complete fear as she put her hands over her mouth and muttered, "Shut up." She told me that the night before, my brother had sleep paralysis and saw the exact same thing, standing at the foot of his bed, watching him sleep. As we talked amongst ourselves, I guess my uncle heard what we were talking about and came out of his room to tell us that he had also had sleep paralysis and had seen something flying around his room in a black gown, ordering him to leave. It is clear that nobody had told anyone about their experiences, and yet we were all seeing the same thing. It is also strange that everyone had experienced some kind of sleep paralysis. The last experience I had was when my son turned 6 months old and began walking around. He would stare at various walls in our home and would giggle and walk around as if something were there talking to him. He would babble back at the walls and sometimes stare down the same hallway that gave me chills and point to something at the end of it. We have now moved out of this house and haven't experienced much since then. I hope that whoever moved in doesn't experience the things we have. I know Arizona is known for sightings of skinwalkers in the deserted areas in which we live in, but I hope I never see anything like that again. If anyone can justify these experiences, please let me know. I would love to hear what you may think. A couple years ago, my husband and I took a trip to Yosemite. We stayed outside the park in El Portal. One evening while we were driving back from the valley, I noticed that the headlights caught what appeared to be somebody laying down on the side of the road. Both feet pointed towards the street. I told my husband that there was a person laying in the pitch black on the side of the highway. He knows I love my true crime and was absolutely certain that what I had seen was just trash bags. I was so certain, I just kept saying, "No, I saw a body. I know it was a person." We made our way back to the hotel, and as we were about to park, my husband looked over at me and said, "You're really sure about this, aren't you? You want to go back?" I was desperate. "Yes." As we drove by again, I saw the feet. I had my husband turn the car back around and yelled at him to stop the car. He rolled down his window and said, "Hey, are you okay?" No answer. One more time, even louder. "Hey, are you okay?" Suddenly, the woman dressed in all black sat up. She was wearing a nice down jacket, black pants, and had her purse and three water bottles. Her makeup was done nicely and she seemed very sweet. I could tell my husband was absolutely shocked. I asked her where she was headed. She said that she was trying to get to the Chevron station up the road and that her mom was going to meet her there to pick her up. This woman looked to be in her late 40s. I knew something weird was going on because where we found her, the Chevron station was still another 7 miles away or so. She said in her mind she thought it was only about a mile from her hotel and she could walk it. We offered her a ride, and she climbed into the back seat. Not before I grabbed a thick scarf to wrap around my neck and pepper spray. As we drove, we tried to ask her questions. Just chit-chat. I asked why she was laying on the side of the road. She said she had gotten tired of walking and just decided to lay down, ready to give up. Whatever that means. It was winter, and she had no hat or gloves on. I could tell she was very fragile. Once we arrived at the Chevron station, she thanked us, got out of the car, and sat on a bench in front of the closed Chevron station store. We offered to stay with her until her mom arrived, but she declined and said she would be fine. I reminded her that there was no cell reception in the area and triple-checked that she didn't want us to wait with her. We drove back to our hotel and noticed that there were now two police cars in the parking lot. They had not been there the first time we arrived back from the valley that evening. I told my husband I knew that they had to be there for that woman. I calmly walked over to one of the cars and asked if they were looking for a missing person, a woman. The officer told me that they were and asked if I had seen her. I explained the situation and that I really felt like the woman had something very bad happened to her. He thanked us for picking her up and giving her a ride. He couldn't tell me what had happened, but thought her leaving and going somewhere else was a smart choice. I asked that he go check on her at the Chevron station, just to make sure she was okay, and that her mom did eventually arrive. I'm realizing that whatever happened was at the same hotel that we were at. That evening, I looked up the local police log and found that a domestic violence dispute had broken out at the hotel. The woman had been beaten very badly, and she was so terrified that she was willing to walk in the dark without a flashlight just to escape. It's my guess that after walking about a half mile from the hotel, she was in so much pain that she just needed to lay down. I got the feeling like she thought she may actually die there. She couldn't go back to the hotel because she had already escaped and gone to the front desk to call her mom. Her husband knew she had been there and would have come after her. The front office called the police for her while she escaped. It's my understanding that the man who hurt her was her husband and was arrested. I always wondered about her and whether she went back to him. Did her mom ever pick her up? Is she safe? Now my husband listens when I say, "There's a body on the side of the road." At the time of this incident, I was 29 and my daughter was 3. I was in my bathroom bathing her and kept hearing a sound that seemed to be coming from the direction of my bedroom window. I wasn't concerned with this sound at first because I live in an apartment complex on the ground level, and people, especially kids, walk by the window in the mulch all the time. So I continued to bathe my daughter when the sound moved from my bedroom window to my daughter's. Now I noticed the sound shift, and so did my small dog. She's typically the quiet type as she's 12 years old. The sound was almost as if there was someone tapping a metal object against the glass. Alert at this point, my dog lets out this ear-piercing bark, one I have never heard from her before. Feeling on guard now, I removed my daughter from the tub and wrapped her in her towel and told her to stay in the bathroom as I proceeded to the kitchen and grabbed a knife. Fight or flight at this point is kicking in as my dog recedes from the direction of my daughter's room. I approach it. Entering the doorway, I begin hearing in a sing-song, low, guttery voice, "I'm here to play with a very pretty lady, a lady that I know, a lady that I see, a lady that I often see in my dream." Absolutely beside myself at this point, and my fight or flight senses always in fight mode, I reached the window and drew open the curtains. As the voice kept singing the song and the tapping sound kept repeating on the window, I snatched the blind string and opened the blinds quickly just to come face to face with an old man bearing a long and dirty beard with eyes that sunk into his head and dark as the night was. He looked at me and grinned, a grin that I can only describe as the one the Grinch wore when he devised his plan. Stuck in a shocked panic for what seemed like an eternity, but was probably no more than a second or two, I began to spring into action. I turned, jetted into the bathroom, and grabbed my daughter and my cell phone. I ran to my front door, still holding the knife, just in case the man happened to run towards my door. I was dialing the police and on the phone with the dispatcher as I ran out of my door and to my neighbor's house. I proceeded to bang on her door with as much force as possible to get her attention. I wanted my child safe at least. She flung open her door, upset of course, until she saw the terror on my face. As I handed her my daughter and began to force myself into her apartment, the old man came running around the corner and into the breezeway, lunging straight for me with a knife of his own. I managed to get my neighbor, her 3 kids, and my daughter into the door as this maniac arrived within arm's length of me. Slamming the door, I told her to take the kids and get into the bathroom because that's the only room in the apartment that the door locks and that there's no window. The old man was now banging and kicking her door, as well as dragging the knife down it. I stayed at the door to ensure that he did not make his way inside, and as I'm sitting on the floor, my feet pushed up against the coat closet base and my back firmly against the door, I heard a booming voice.
Drop your weapon and get on the ground, now!
I sat listening as the sounds of a tussle came from the breezeway. Then, boom, boom, boom. You can open the door, ma'am. It's the police. Relieved, I eased open the door in time enough to see the one officer exiting the breezeway with the man, and another asking me if I was okay, and if I could answer a few questions. I spent about 15 minutes explaining the situation to him, as he jotted down the notes on his pad. The other officer then approached us with two window screens, as the old man had taken the one off my window and my daughter's in an attempt to get inside. The approaching officer asked me if I recognized the man, and I told him I have never seen him before in my life. This is when the officer looked at me and said that this man admitted having been following me for about a month. He first saw me at the grocery store, which is within walking distance from my apartment. Since then, he had watched and waited for the opportunity to try to get into my apartment, to play with me, according to him. This man followed me for a month. And to make it even odder, I would tell my then boyfriend that I felt at times as though I was being watched and I was scared. The main thing I am thankful for is that I am the type of person who locks all the windows and doors, no matter how safe I feel. For a bit of context, after moving to a more rural area, I haven't been able to see my grandparents as much as I did when my family and I were living in the city. Because of that, once in a while they will take the long drive over here to stay for about a week or two. Last Monday, that is exactly what happened. My grandmother, grandfather, and uncle came to stay for a week. Now, my family and I own a German Shepherd dog named Kane. He is about 2 years old, and boy, is he hyper. Kane does not like anything coming onto our property or into our home, so he will bark for ages unless the thing leaves or we remove him from the situation. While my grandparents and uncle were here, he barked at each and every one of them through the glass storm door that's attached to our front door. And he would bark at my grandpa whenever he went to sit outside. One night, we had him inside in a dog crate, because he comes inside to sleep sometimes. His crate was placed behind the couch, and sitting at the edge of the couch was my uncle. And once Kane got a good sniff and realized that he wasn't one of us, he started barking. So we had to put a blanket over his crate. Now that you know how crazy our good boy is, here's the story. As I'm telling this, my grandparents and uncle just left about an hour ago, and my uncle had quite a story to tell in the morning. Last night, Kane's crate was placed in my room because, well, I wanted him in my room. Always having outside dogs throughout my childhood, I never got to have one of them sleep in my room with me, so I was quite excited about our upcoming sleepover. After getting the crate in my room and placing a blanket down for Kane, we brought him in from outside and into my room. And in the hallway outside of my room, there are two bathrooms on the wall to the left. I closed my door so Kane wouldn't see one of my grandparents or my uncle trying to go into the bathroom and start barking at them in the middle of the night. After reading and talking to Kane a bit, I turned off the lights and we both went to sleep. In the early hours of the morning, around 1 to 3 a.m., my uncle got up from the couch to go use the bathroom on the other side of the house. We always have a small light on in the kitchen at night, so it isn't too dark. And I'm guessing that's how my uncle saw what he saw in the hallway. After walking from the living room and through the kitchen, he got to where the two bathrooms were. And sitting motionless in front of my bathroom door was what looked to be Kane. His mostly black fur almost blended in with the darkness, making it difficult to see his face. Ears straight up, not barking or growling, just staring, heavily unnerved. He turned around and walked back to the living room. A while later, my grandpa got up to use the bathroom, and lo and behold, nothing was there. My uncle was adamant that he did see Kane in that hallway. But Kane was in my room, inside of a locked cage and behind a closed door. And if he was merely seeing things due to being sleepy, the fear of the situation would have woken him up enough for his illusion of Kane sitting in the hallway to disappear. Sometimes I'll see a spider or multiple spiders on my wall while I'm half asleep, and once I blink or really look at it, they will disappear. But what my uncle saw didn't. So I believe that he did see something, but it wasn't Kane. It was something trying to take the form of Kane. For what reason? I don't know. But the intentions of that potential entity remaining unknown make it all the more disturbing. I live in the UK, and a few years ago I sold up, took early retirement, bought a boat, and dropped out to go on an adventure exploring the UK's inland waterways. I don't have a mooring through choice. The whole reason I bought a boat was to get out and explore, and doing this has taken me to some really interesting places I wouldn't have thought of visiting otherwise. I visited some urban and really lively areas like Liverpool, but also spent time out in the sticks away from everything in extremely rural and peaceful spots. It's pretty cool being able to choose your spot dependent on your mood, and if you don't like the area or don't like your neighbors, you can just throw your ropes and move. In the UK, the waterways license enables you to boat without having to take a formal marina berth, provided you genuinely keep moving, with most mooring spots being free up to 14 days before you have to move. This is called constant cruising, and if you have a decent craft, well set up for off-grid living, it's an amazing way of life. Many people choose this way if they're not tied by their jobs or on an adventure like me, but there are many living on pretty shady, unlicensed boats out on the network because they can't afford anything else, and some with some issues that you would be best to give a wide berth to. I am a lone female boater with just my dog snorkeling spaniel and two cats as crew. So I follow lots of boating forums to keep an ear out for problem areas or people and try to be sensible with my safety and my choice of stopping points. It's been very rare that I've ever had any sort of issues in the years I've been doing this, but occasionally I'll find I've got little choice about where I have to stop or how long for. In the winter time, I can often come across navigations closed due to flooding or broken infrastructure, like a broken lock stopping me in my tracks. In summer, it's not unheard of for a canal to run out of water and find myself unable to move until the level rises again. As I'm writing this, I'm stranded on a quarter-mile stretch of canal with river navigations at either end, closed due to flooding, and I've been stuck here for 2 months now. My cats like to go out, so I always try to moor away from roads and seek out spots where the cats would have an escape route from any pursuing dog, like a thick hedge or a fenced-off area of some kind. So I chose a spot right up at the end of this canal, alongside a derelict industrial area. There's a couple of gaps in the steel fencing a person can get through, and after checking it out to make sure it's reasonably safe, and finding mostly just piles of bricks and unusable but deteriorated roadway left, I've been in there regularly walking the dog, with the cats even trotting behind. Only once have I ever seen anyone else in there, and that was just another lady with her dog. My cats have discovered there's mice in there, and they're having way too much fun to come home as often as they usually do, so it's become a nightly ritual to have to go in with my head torch and dog and retrieve them before bed. They are both pretty great cats that think they're dogs, so if I go and shout for them, they'll come running and follow me all the way back. The first 7 weeks went without incident, but a few nights ago, I was in there shouting for one of my cats when I heard what sounded like bricks being bashed together in very deliberate, even-spaced multiples of three. My first thought was someone was hurt and maybe can't call out, so they were trying to get my attention. So I stopped and listened. Another three bashes came, but this time, nearer. Okay, someone's moving and definitely not stuck. So I pick up the pace and think that this is just weird. It's 11 p.m. and below zero with ice everywhere. There's no shelter, just piles of bricks. So why would anyone be in here? My cat comes bounding up at this point, so I just scoop her up and practically run back towards the fence. Another three bashes. The first one really loud and heavily emphasized, and again, all very deliberate and evenly spaced. But this time, nearer again. I've moved quite a distance and turned a corner by this point, but the noise has followed and switched sides like they had cut the corner and almost caught up with me. I get us all through the fence and back on the boat, locking it all down. At first, I don't hear anything, but my cats do, and they keep lifting their heads and alerting to something outside. But then I do hear it. The fence is only about 10 feet from my side of the boat, and I hear a growling coming from the other side. Loud growling. It was a god-awful sound, and I sat there scared witless, wondering what kind of freak would be doing that and what they were going to do next. If you can imagine a human trying to mimic the sound of a slow revving motorbike, it kinda sounded like that, and this went on for nearly 10 minutes. I turned all my lights off in case they could see in, and sat awake for hours, too scared to sleep, and constantly watching my crew for any indication that they could hear anything, but there was nothing further, and I eventually fell asleep. 2 days later, I was walking down the towpath and walked past a small, rough-looking cruiser moored about 200 yards away from me. As I passed, I heard a man's voice mimicking me, calling my cat's name, like I had been that night before. I looked over and saw a really scruffy and dirty-looking man, I would say in his 30s, with dark hooded eyes and god-awful teeth grinning at me. I have no doubt this was his way of telling me that it had been him that night, and he looked like he was now trying to freak me out even more. So I stopped for a second and gave him my best defiant, "I'm not scared of you, and you would think again, because I am a secret badass" stare. I even managed a sly psycho-esque grin of my own right back at him before walking off. I don't know why I reacted like that. Generally, challenging someone who might be unbalanced is a dangerous thing to do, and wouldn't be my usual approach. Apart from the fact he looked mentally ill at best, possessed at worst. Anyone who roams around at night growling has some real scary issues. But just there in the moment, I just instinctively felt the need to stare him down and not show fear. And boy, do I hope my instincts were right, because I am still stuck here, and despite my bravado, I am in no way a badass. Thankfully, haven't seen him since. In fact, in the 2 months I've been here, that was the only time I have clapped my eyes on him at all, despite walking past the boat every other day. I really hope to keep it that way. And as soon as those navigation lights change to signify the river is open again, me and my furry crew are out of here. And to the possessed-looking growling guy, I hope your boat is as clapped out as it looks, so that you can't follow. My family immigrated to Germany in the 70s. A lot of workers were needed then, but many locals didn't like the fact that with the immigrant workers also came immigrant families. My parents both worked shifts at factories, which did not leave any time for my upbringing. In those days, this meant that most children were sent back to the grandparents in our native land. But my mother, herself having been forced to live without her parents for a while, did not want her child to grow up like that. Instead, she insisted that I get a nanny. Her name was Gieslind. She was a nice older German lady with three daughters of her own, all grown up now, and only the youngest one, around 19, still living with them. I rarely ever saw her, though, since she was a university student at the time. They lived in a nice little house at the outskirts of town, on a hill with lots of wood and farmlands. I loved it there, and I got to see my parents every week, at least 2 days on the weekends. This all seems to be a lot of background information, but it is important to understand what came next. The area where my nanny lived did have two more houses close by, and then there were some farmhouses further away. One was our direct neighbor, a nice German family with a teenage son who sometimes played badminton with me. And then there was a huge old mansion that always looked like a castle to me. It was further down the hill, and surrounded by some wooden area and high fence was built all around it. Whenever we left the hill or returned, we had to pass this building, and I always wondered who lived there. But I never saw anyone, and Gieslind never talked about them. She was otherwise a very talkative, lively person, so that's why it seemed odd to me. I was never too curious. I kept happily playing alone or with the neighbor's boy or the neighbor's cats, until one evening. Gieslind dressed me in my finest dress, and to my surprise, we went to the mansion. There was a big party, lots of people in fine dresses and expensive-looking suits. Tables were full of foods I have never seen before, and the house, although huge on the outside, seemed even bigger from the inside. While I tried to find Gieslind, whom I lost sight of after she left for the bathroom, two very big white dogs padded into the dining room where I was sitting. I have had some bad encounters with big dogs, so those two scared me senseless. But I did not want to scream and embarrass Gieslind. So I backed up, trying to get away from them quietly. This seems to spark their interest in me, however. So I ended up having to run from them room to room until I was cornered. I'm sure that they never had any bad intentions towards me and only wanted to play. But I was so scared, I silently began to cry. At that moment, a young girl appeared behind the dogs. I still remember her clear as day, although this happened more than 2 decades ago. She was around 8 or 9, maybe a little older than me at the time. She had short, dark blonde hair up to her chin with a fringe, which was slightly curled. Her eyes were brown, and she was very pale. On the other hand, was quite dark. The girl called to the dogs and both left the room obediently. The relief I felt is hard to explain. I wanted to thank her, but she had already turned and left before I could. I started running after her when I was suddenly stopped by some old German man I vaguely could identify as the host of the party, and beside him, his wife. I don't remember their faces, but I do remember they did not like me being there, practically radiating a form of hostility I could not understand. There was some heated discussion with my nanny. Then she took my hand and we left. She was mumbling angrily about their behavior while returning to our home. I looked behind me while we walked, and sure enough, the girl was standing at one of the windows, one hand pressed against it, smiling. I smiled back at her and asked Gieslind if she thought they would let me play with the young girl from the party sometime. This made her stop and look at me, eyebrows furrowed in obvious confusion. "What girl?" she asked. "There was no other girl your age." I relayed to her what happened before the couples had stopped me so rudely, but the furrows between her brows only deepened. We continued walking, and I had only just started thinking that the conversation was over when she suddenly said, "No, child, I think you're mistaken. There was no other girl. In fact, it seems children were not invited to this event." She added a grim note in her tone. There was not much I could counter. I was raised not to argue with elders. I never saw the girl again, even though I scanned the windows carefully every time we passed the building. After all these years, I'm asking myself if my brain had made her up, or if I did encounter the helpless ghost of a little girl that at one point had lived and died in that house. Some things we ought to never find out. And I am okay with that. It was fall of 2015, and I was 14 years old. I've always stayed up late on the weekends, where the sun started to rise and you could hear the early morning birds. I was usually up playing whatever video game I was into at the time, or watching anime. One night, I decided to watch one of my favorite movies to date, Spirited Away. It must have been about 3:30 or 4 o'clock a.m. at this point, when I heard a crash outside the front of the house. It sounded metallic, like some kind of crunching and breaking of what I thought could be our satellite dish hitting the pavement of our driveway. It scared me at first, but I blew it off and figured I would just let my dad know in the morning when he woke up for work. There was no reason to bother him now about it. Not like it was an emergency or anything, since I didn't even watch cable. I resumed watching the movie. We lived in the outskirts of town, surrounded by forest. There was about a quarter mile on either side of us before we reached the neighbor's property. We lived on a hill where the road curved around the grass that lined our front yard. It was sharp enough that you couldn't see if anything was coming while pulling out of your driveway. You had to roll the windows down and listen for any approaching cars. Across the street from us was a golf course, and a bit farther than that was a local zoo, so you could imagine there is not a lot of light or people around at night. 10 minutes or so had passed since I heard the satellite fall, when I started to hear what I thought was faint screaming from outside. I could feel my ears getting hot and my heart starting to race. I paused the movie and sat quietly, listening. Another one. I tried to believe it could have been some kind of animal out there, but it was definitely the scream from another human being. I got up and just stared at the curtains that covered the window in our living room, too afraid to pull them back and look outside. The screaming continued. A woman. My mind jumped to the first horrific thing I could think of. Someone is getting murdered in the woods outside of our house. Still being weary about the situation, I woke up my older brother first and told him what I had heard. I must not have seemed frightened enough, because all he did was shuffle in his bed and say with a groggy voice, "It's probably a monkey or something that escaped from the zoo. It happens." With him being around 4 years older than me, I decided to try to believe that. I went back out into the living room. The screaming was too surreal for me to ignore. It was blood-curdling. All I could do was stand there, frozen with fear, listening to it wail on faintly from outside. I wasn't sure what could be happening out there anymore. This had been going on for what felt like 10 or 15 minutes by now. If someone was getting killed in the woods in front of my house, I thought, it would be over by now. With almost perfect timing, as I'm standing there frozen, hair standing up on all ends and eyes wide, there was a knocking on our front door just a few feet away from me. "They're coming for us." Without even thinking, I bolted into my parents' bedroom down the hall. "Dad, someone's knocking on the door." It looked like some sort of force had pushed my father out of his bed. He sprung into action. It took him all of about 5 seconds to get up, get to the closet, and pull out a weapon. He motioned for me to stay behind him as he crept out from the hallway to the living room. With his back against the door and weapon in hand, he slowly turned the knob and opened the door to reveal a small child. This kid had to be about 7 years old with cuts on his face and arms.
"My mom needs help,"
he said to us. My father opened the door all the way to reveal that down the hill, a van had crashed head-on to the tree across the street. The screaming was coming from the mother behind the wheel. Now that I could hear it fully, she had been screaming for help. He told the kid to hold on for a second while he went to throw on some clothes. By this point, my mom and brother were awake and standing next to me. My father told us to stay while he went down to check out the situation. If anything really serious or gruesome was down there, he did not want any of us to see it. We took the kid in, wrapped a blanket around him, and got him some water. We put cartoons on the TV and tried anything we could to distract him. My father later told us there was the mother, a toddler, and an infant also in the vehicle. The toddler was completely fine, and the baby had been flipped out of its car seat and was sitting on the floor of the back seat. It had its arm curled up to its body, holding it and crying. It must have broken something. The mother, on the other hand, was crushed in between the seat and the steering wheel. She went on yelling that she couldn't feel her legs and begged my father to look and see if he could see anything. He took a deep breath, pulled out his phone flashlight and tried to look down at her legs. They could have been torn up, mangled, or even severed from her body for all he knew. But he couldn't see anything. The front of the car was pushed in so far that he couldn't even see past the steering wheel. The woman was small, maybe 100 pounds or so, and that is what saved her life. Had she been any bigger, the 55-mile-per-hour impact would have killed her instantly. She said she had fallen asleep at the wheel on the way home from her parents' house. Once the police and paramedics arrived, we gave the kid back to them and watched from our driveway. They pulled out the jaws of life to cut away the pieces of the car in order to get to her. It took about 45 minutes to get her out of what used to be her SUV. The impact of the crash combined with shredding the thing apart, it hardly looked at all like a vehicle anymore. It was too far away and too dark out for me to make out most of what was happening. I don't remember them pulling her out, which is probably a good thing. I can't imagine what her legs must have looked like. Everyone was put into the ambulance and headed to the hospital. My family and I stayed awake for a few hours after that, still shaken up from what had just happened. I'm 22 now, and I still think about that night a few times a year. I don't think I'll ever forget the screams of pure pain and fear that I heard that night. Something is going on here. My wife and I recently moved to a new area for more work and housing options to suit our family. This isn't the first that I've written about this either. To make a long story short, my family and I have all been experiencing what seems to be missing time. We've been living here for about a year now, and we have settled in nicely. Aside for the occasional ill, just call them bizarre incidents, things are fine. This all started, I'll say, about 6 months ago. The first time it happened was when my wife and son went for a walk and swore they walked down the street, only to end up at the end that they started at. They had been out running errands and had been gone for an hour or two. But in my time frame, they walked out the door and 5 minutes later came in with arms full of groceries and a weird look on both of their faces. We chalked it up to none of us actually paying attention to the time and left it at that. Only one day, a couple of days later, I had something similar happen to me, and when I looked back at the road this time, it was missing a section? It was weird, to say the least, but again, I dismissed this as just being tired. Maybe a trick of the light? Looking back, I could not have been more naive. What was happening to us would turn out to be very real. Over the next couple months, the same scenario would play out in the midst of various errands or mundane day-to-day goings-on. For days at a time at first, it would be normal, only to leave in an anxious web of panic and dread as we seemed to sink into the cracks of a skipping record. Over and over, we would go about the same events, stuck in an endless loop with no way of knowing what is happening or how to escape. As time went on, it became more frequent and thus more and more difficult to judge the measure of time. At its best, it was a blip in time, a short skip over a fragment of instance along our path through our day-to-day existence. At its worst, a tirelessly, endlessly cycle of hellish continuity, leaving you exhausted and shaken by the time you end up getting out of it. This makes it all so much stranger. Whenever we escape these glitches, time trudges on ceaselessly, as if it had never faltered. And yet you feel like you ran a marathon. It is exceedingly difficult for me to try to explain accurately. Just the other week, I made my morning walk down the busy street and down to the bus terminal, where I would catch my bus for work, only to get to the end of the road and be on the other end of where I started again. Again and again, I went through the motions of this morning ritual in a rondo of absolutely terror and astonishment. It would be easy to dismiss walking by identical plumes of grass or a similar maple tree in a town of millions. But God only knows how many times I must have walked by the same Thai restaurant before it clicked for me again. My heart fell into my stomach as I realized I was again stuck in whatever this was. I still don't understand it. It doesn't happen every day, and I can't say that it's ever occurred to me more than once in a day, and never to this sort of scale. Never mind if this is possible. If this is the case, why? What is the function of time if I constantly have to endure such a loop? What is happening in order to cause this? In that moment, I could feel panic start to set in, as I again felt trapped in an inescapable prison of infinite space and time. I don't know why, but when I started to feel my instincts swell up to the surface, I just started running. It isn't like I was running out of time. I ran for my life as I was trying in vain to break a record, like a horse with blinders bouldering down the road, trying desperately to escape what spooked it. Around the bend and through the city blocks of established and once established small businesses, marked with thinned canopies of young native saplings and the many parkettes lining the dying borough through which I commute, I ran straight through to the bus station, as if nothing could impede me. Ahead of me, I could see the downtown core, buses turning off and on the turnout into the bus terminal. A low-flying jet plane passes above the hustle and bustle of the city ahead of me. I near the entrance of the bus terminal, quickly making my way towards the crossing between me and the glass door to the lobby. My heart is pounding in my chest to the point where I think it's going to burst. I can barely see, sweat dripping out of every pore of my body, carrying the salt from my brow into every corner of my eyes. As I vaulted up off the street and onto the crosswalk, I looked up and met the glance of a wiry old man staring up at me from the bench in the terminal on the other side of the glass. I looked down, and as my feet met the ground, I understepped and toppled face first and slid on my arms tucked into my chest, colliding into the brick of the bus terminal wall just next to the door. I felt a jolt and a sharp crack as my head hit the wall. Everything spun around me as the darkness in my head bruised with an aura of brilliant color. I felt heavy as I lurched over onto my side in a daze, and with my eyes still closed, I could tell that I was bleeding pretty badly. My head throbbed as the jagged shards of rock and broken glass bore into my arms from the weight of my body pressing down. Warm blood mixing with the silt of my sweat and the dusty pavement. As I struggled to make sense of my surroundings, I threw an arm up and managed to grab hold of the ledge of the window above and pull myself up to lean against the brick. I opened my eyes, and in a blur, I made out the streets around me, the bright light of the sun cutting through the haze of my vision. As it all came into focus again, I realized the hustle and bustle was gone. There wasn't a soul around for miles, save for mine, at least out here. My stomach churned as I closed my eyes and my head fell back to meet the cold wall behind me. With my eyes closed, everything began to spin again, and I was met with an overwhelming urge to sleep. As I tried to pull myself out of it, I heard the door behind me swing open and a staggered shuffling with the distinct clatter of a walking stick. It must have been the old man that I saw.
"That was some show," I heard the old man say as I lay in my daze.
I willed myself to perk up and opened my eyes to meet the old man's face above me. Nobody. As I sat up, my stomach hit the roof of my mouth, and I keeled over to the side to vomit as my stomach retched. While I sit crouched over myself panting, the digital bell tone sounded on the hour as the midday sun met me from behind the tall buildings above me. The sun, I thought to myself. It's moving. As I slowly started to realize what this meant, a flock of pigeons swoops in cooing to land at the platform. The passive whispering of distant traffic slowly begins to re-enter my periphery. It's over. Addled and exhausted to my core, I made the wise choice to head back to my place and call in sick for the day. There was no way I was going to put in a day of work after that. Needless to say, I was also covered in blood and scrapes up and down my forearms, and likely had a head injury that needed medical attention. My wife at work, my kids at school and daycare. I went up to the hospital myself and ended up getting treated for a moderate concussion. I spent the rest of the week resting and trying to get over what happened to me over the course of that morning. Still, I never told a soul, not even my wife. But I know for a fact she knows. She has to. At this point, we both experience these things regularly, and there's no denying she's acutely aware of the severity of this particular time. Silence speaks countless words in this house. We don't have to say a word.